Blog Talk Radio.
Are in our home. Clean your clothes in the laundry room with spotless dishes from the dishwasher. And now I can clean and tasty drinking water at F.
Good evening, everybody. Bobby Rodrigo here, and I take liberty with my coffee, Coffee Party Radio. Tuesday night, November 11th, happy Veterans Day. To all my fellow veterans and all the service members out there and give their lives for their country and to defend the Constitution. As you know, we are advocates for the Constitution on this show and me personally. And I wanted to thank everybody for joining in. We have some things we want to cover, and then we have some wonderful guests tonight. So let me get right at it. First of all, we honor our veterans today, and it's very important for a lot of reasons. Mostly for the veterans themselves, we honor them for the right reasons, of course. They literally put their lives on the line for you and I, and I don't say that without meaning it. I don't say that trivially. And here's why. One of the things I wanted to do today, one of the things I wanted to cover, is I wanted to read to everybody the oath that I took when I joined the Navy and the oath that is taken by every enlisted man who joins. It says I, and in my case it would be I, Bobby Rodrigo, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. If you are an officer that is going to take the oath, this is what that will say. I, insert the name, having been appointed an officer in the military branch relevant to that person, of the United States, as indicated above in the grade of the rank, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and I take the obligation freely without any mental reservations or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which I am about to enter, so help me God. And then, of course, one of the things that they tell you, at least if they remember to, I do remember being told this, is before you raise your right hand, make sure you understand what you are swearing or attesting to. The oath of enlistment should be not taken lightly. And that is a very important statement because essentially, now, when I joined, I was 17. And I joined in 1980. Actually, I joined in 79 under the delayed entry program, which is a program that of enlistment that happened where you could join and then you would have a date that you would go in, and of course I had to wait until after I was 18 to go in. So I joined, and then I entered the August of 1980. And at the time, the reason I had joined was because of the hostages that had been taken in Iran when Jimmy Carter was president. Ronald Reagan had just been elected president. And here I am, 18 years old, and what I've just done is I have just told myself and the people who are of the United States, and of course all the officers and the President of the United States, and et cetera, that I am, you have my life. I have just given it to you to do my duty to defend the Constitution of the United States. I have forfeited my life in that regard. And that is very, very, very important to understand about the oath that is taken by the people who enter the service in the United States. So I wanted to make sure and emphasize that because we have a lot going on with our veterans all the time. Now, of course, we've been at war, and I say war reluctantly because, of course, Congress has not declared war. Congress hasn't declared war since World War II. But we've been in Afghanistan for 13 years, and we have taken out a government. We have helped the new government come in. We did the same thing in Iraq, of course. We attacked the government of Iraq. We attacked the leader of Iraq. We invaded the country. We took it over, but we weren't at war. And Congress didn't declare war, but that's what we did. Seems to me like that was the thing of war. But putting that aside for Veterans Day. So what we are not doing properly in our society is taking care of my fellow veterans and service members who are engaged in combat right now. And, of course, right now we are in the Middle East to some degree. I believe the count is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,500 people that are on the ground advising in the ISIS situation, ISIS, ISIL, whatever situation. And please do not take my whatever as some kind of trivial statement. I'm just trying to get past that part of it. You have the veterans who are coming back from all of these places, including where else we are, Libya and Somalia and these other places where you're engaged in some degree, whether it's covertly or openly, and suffering from PTSD. And we have a lot of people suffering from PTSD. It has been reported ad nauseum that we do not take care of our veterans. We had the recent scandal in Arizona, the VA hospital there. Of course, we've heard about the lack of care for our veterans. And the other aspect that we've heard about is the suicide rate that has been going on in the service and with veterans for a number of years now. This is all very important. It has to do with the economy. It has to do with the way they're treated. It has to do with the access to care that they have for the problems that they indeed have. These are all very important. I think about them a lot. And, of course, whenever I see anybody in uniform or know about somebody who is in the service, I always acknowledge them and talk to them if I can, whatever the situation is. And there are so many people that are doing that as well. And I'm going to introduce somebody to you, a couple of people actually, I'm going to introduce to you tonight on this show that are doing wondrous work for veterans in a kind of controversial area because of the way the federal government and many state governments, including Georgia where I live, handle it. And we're talking about the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes, the cannabis treatments that go on in so many aspects of health, or I should say disease. But in this particular case, we're going to discuss the recent studies and therapies that have been going on involving use of cannabis for PTSD. Now, before I bring in on our first guest, I want to make the world understand out there in radio world that marijuana, as far as the federal government is concerned, is considered a Schedule I drug. Now, I don't know if a lot of people really get what that means from the standpoint of the law, but this marijuana was placed as a Schedule I drug when they created the sentencing guidelines and way back when they first started the war on drugs. And the Schedule I drug is the worst rating or that for the most dangerous drugs that are out there. And marijuana has always been that. And it has been a constant struggle by the scientific community, by the activist community, to get that status removed. And the federal government has not budged. And it actually has been, there's a long history that you guys can look up about the battle in the federal circuit involving this issue. The federal circuit is one of our circuit courts that exist. And up until, I think it might have been 3-4 years ago, they wouldn't even allow the hearing to take place, let alone get to the merits to decide it. these are one of the things that are interesting because, of course, the VA is a federally funded and federally ran facility and agency. So there's a roadblock for marijuana to be used to help servicemen and women who have PTSD. These are one of the things going on, besides the states doing it. And then, of course, we all know, and if you don't, we'll read it real quick, is the states that have been decriminalizing, the states and local municipalities that have been decriminalizing and legalizing, and I prefer decriminalizing, but decriminalizing and legalizing marijuana, whether it be for medicinal purposes, recreational purposes, there still is that possibility that the federal government will kind of, well, it's more than a possibility because they've done it for years. The federal government will come in and interfere, arrest, close down, confiscate these dispensaries. And they are doing a lot more about that. And I'll let some of our guests talk about some of that. I don't want to take away their expertise. They are far more expert at this than I am because they are single issue advocates for the most part on this issue, this very important issue. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce to you first Dr. Uma Dhanavalan. She is a medical doctor, an MD. I believe she holds two masters. She can correct me if I'm wrong. I know that I've talked to this woman before. We were going to actually work together earlier this year, and our schedules just didn't allow it. When I was doing the Panda Take Back Tour in Albany, people that she were, she's on the board here in Georgia for the Peachtree Normal. And that is how I initially met her, through my involvement with Peachtree Normal and working together with them. Wonderful individual, and I'm going to bring her in right now. Doctor, how are you this evening? Doctor, are you there? Let's see. Doctor, are you there? It looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. And we will have to address this here. Okay. Let me try James. We also have James Bell, who is the director of Georgia Care Project, who works with everybody on this issue and is an advocate for medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, and knows a lot about the subject. And let's see if I can bring him in on the call. James, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Bobby. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful, James. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Got the cup of coffee here and ready to talk.
Fantastic. I bet you have liberty in your coffee like I do. Knowing you, I think that's accurate.
There's more than liberty in that coffee, trust me.
I can't join you that way, James, because I'm supposed to be, you know, focusing on doing a show. But I applaud you. Let me see if I can get Doctor on as well. Let's see. We were having some difficulties here. Dr. Umar, are you there? I'm not getting her on her phone. I believe Sharon has called in as well.
You guys, can you hear me?
There you are.
Oh,
hello.
Beautiful. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, yes. James, I can hear. Can you hear James?
Yes, I can.
Oh.
That means our audience
really
can hear you.
Thank you, guys,
as well.
And I appreciate this. Number one, I really believe that this is an opportunity, huge opportunity for people to really take the myths away and being about the truth.
Where's the whiskey?
And this is an opportunity for education and everybody to having people together and really understand cannabis and about the endocannabinoid system. And if we can help people understand that and the medicinal values and how we can get healthcare providers to understand it, that would be great.
Absolutely. And I know that the two of you work in this area so much. I had the pleasure of actually meeting James for the second time last week at the Libertarian Election Headquarters, and Dr. Uman, you and I have talked. And what I'd like to do is, Dr. Uman, give us a little bit of your background, and then we'll go to James to do the same thing. I want our audience to know about you and what your work is and what your work background is and educational background, if you don't mind.
I really appreciate that opportunity. I am a family doctor, and I'm also occupational medicine and a cannabis therapeutic specialist. And I've been very fortunate because I really am about prevention, and I've learned a lot about patients, and I've really understood about this cause, which is something so different than what we learned in medical school. I never learned about the endocannabinoid system. Neither did I know about the science of the endocannabinoid system. I've been very fortunate with people like you and Sharon to understand that there's much more than understanding about science. And I really am not a legal person or anything, but I really am about science, and I've done that. And I can't tell you enough about this is what it is. The science is there, and the American government has the patent. People don't know this. The U.S. government has the patent for cannabis that was established in 2003 for antioxidant and neuroprotective effects. This government has the patent.
Yeah, there was a recent story about that, I believe, that actually went through some of the social media sites that you guys work on. I know I took it and ran with it as well in the number of the areas that I work, talking about that very specifically. If I'm not mistaken, they hold two patents on this area, I believe. Is that not correct?
Hey, Sharon, I know about one. Do you know about another?
I may be wrong. I do recall reading it. I thought I saw that they had two patents. But we do know that they have at least the one for sure. There's no question about that. I want to bring James in as well to get James's background and let people know what he does with Georgia Care and overall in the medical marijuana field. James, go ahead and give us your background, please.
Yeah, well, first of all, I have no medical or legal background. I'm a citizen activist. I got involved in the late 1980s with the NORML organization, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. You know, our goal back then was to legalize. The goal today is to legalize, or as I say, to re-legalize. In 2012, I saw that Colorado and Washington State legalized. To me, that was a sign that the attitudes across this country are changing, and I decided to form an organization that is basically a clearinghouse for information. We serve as a lobbyist, as a spokesperson for the issues, and we try to put a face and a voice to all those out there that are either afraid to speak up, can't speak up, or you know, can't get involved. And hopefully, as activists, we encourage other people to get involved. So I formed the Georgia Care Project, which is the campaign for access, reform, and education. And we began lobbying. We work with NORML. We work with a lot of other groups out there. We are a coalition. We work with coalitions. And we're just like Dr. Uma. She's educating people. We're trying to use her knowledge to educate people. In fact, on our website today, we just posted Dr. Uma's educational testimony on gacareproject.com. And we're hoping to use that, her video and her expertise, to educate others and to open the minds and the hearts of people and to explain to people that this plant has so many beneficial uses, and that we want to legalize it and quit criminalizing people and quit letting people suffer when they can, in fact, find some relief of their pain and suffering.
Hey, can I interject?
Fantastic. Yes, please.
You guys are awesome. This whole initiative is about education and the patients. And at the end of the day, I am very passionate because I really believe, like, you guys are doing this, and I want to help. We're going to bring the science, and people like James are trying to get the viewpoint, and I'm here to help you to bring medicine to science. And honestly, I could not make a difference other than if you guys were not helping me here. And I got awesome people, and we are here together. I really thank you, and I want to say, help me to know how I can help you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you're helping us already. You're educating us, and we're going to use your expertise, and we're going to spread the word. So this is a coalition. This is an effort of a lot of people across the state of Georgia and, frankly, across this country to re-educate people about the issue and try to make it real to people that, you know, we're criminalizing people for a medicine. And, you know, I support, you know, legalization. As a libertarian, I believe, you know, we have a right to determine our lifestyles and determine what we do with ourselves. And so what Dr. Uma is teaching is basically...
Yeah, I just want to make you guys understand. I'm not a doctor. I am a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I am absolutely wanting to educate people that we need to get this medicine out of Schedule 1. And this is not something that should be in Schedule 1. And
absolutely.
Honestly,
that's a major, major problem in getting the federal government to budge, and always has been. I know James mentioned that he had worked with Normal since 1980. This has been an issue for me for a long time as well. And I know you're both familiar with what I was talking about earlier at the preamble of the show, when I had mentioned that there has been a movement for a long time to get the marijuana removed as a Schedule I drug in front of the Federal Circuit, and they wouldn't even allow the argument to happen for so many years.
Yeah.
Let alone the merits to go
on.
Can
I tell you something? This is so criminal. This is daggone criminal. It's so political. The U.S. government has a patent that was originated in 2003. The U.S. government has a patent. And why would a government have a patent? If we don't have medical use or medical research, why would you have a patent?
Yeah, it's actually patent number 6630507.
I actually had
it archived. Yeah, I actually had it archived.
I have it right in front of me.
Yeah.
And it isn't
two patents. It's like you had described earlier. It's as antioxidants and neuroprotectants. So I was confusing that it was two patents, but it's actually for cannabinoids as an antioxidant and a neuroprotectant. And people, you can find this.
So let's make it simple. We need to get it out of Schedule 1. There is medical evidence and there is research. And the U.S. government has a patent on it. Excuse me. Let's just stop playing here and understand this is about patients, not politics. Let's just get it out of that ballpark and let's help people.
Well, you know, there was a... Go ahead, James.
Unfortunately, we have a Congress that is in some type of gridlock here. They can't take care of the basic business that Congress should be taking care of. So the issue of rescheduling, you know, there was a lot of hope that President Obama would change a lot of these policies when he came into office, and now we are in the sixth year here. He's got 2 years to to change some of these policies. And if he can't do it directly, he can certainly, you know, get up on the soapbox here and speak up for it and start pushing in that direction. And, you know, it's, I hear, you know, Dr. Uma's frustration that it's so obvious to us that it is a medicine, but yet they continue to keep it as a Schedule One, which means it is not a medicine. And so it can't be both ways. You can't have a patent on a medicine and then deny it and put it in Schedule One and say it's not a medicine. So these are the kind of obstacles.
Dave, thank you. Thank you for expressing my words. And, you know, as clinicians, I suck at as being a business person or doing all this stuff. I'm sorry. I really care about my patients, and I have learned more from all of you that, honestly, this is something that's real. Let's get the facts. This is the government that's saying this is, should be in Schedule One, and let's talk about it that way. And I can. I can talk about it that way on a clinical level. I am not a politician. I don't know all the other stuff, but I can tell you on medicinal use and medicinal research, we got both. Potential for abuse anywhere can be. I hope
absolutely,
I'm not reiterating, but I maybe need to reiterate. I'm sorry.
No, actually, I want to cover a lot of what you're saying even further. One of the things that has been happening lately involving drugs and uses medicinally, particularly marijuana, and I actually even throw another one in there, MDMA, when it comes to PTSD, is that veterans police officers
okay.
and...
That's
and,
a whole nother and, conversation. You
exactly.
got to understand, it's a whole nother conversation. And I will be there for you guys, and there's a lot, and I am glad we're talking about it, but you guys need to go to vetptsdstudy.com, and I would love to have another conversation with you guys, James, if that would be okay, and we can entitle it cannabis and PTSD.
Well, I want to cover some of that. Yeah.
Well, let's look on the brighter side here. Here's what is happening across this nation: the states are ignoring federal law, and I think this is very encouraging that the states are standing up and saying we don't care what the federal law says. We're going to move forward. We're going to legalize. We're going to medicalize. We're going to decriminalize, and we're going to move forward with this. At some point, the government, the federal government, is just going to be ruled to be irrelevant here. And at one state, one city, one jurisdiction at a time is changing these laws. So that's the encouraging part here, is this country is changing in spite of the federal government, in spite of the federal rules and regulations here. So that's what got me back involved, was just seeing this movement across the country that, you know, the states, the citizens of these states are far more intelligent and far more compassionate than some of our federal leaders here. They don't have the courage to stand up. So I'm encouraged by it. You know, things are changing. It doesn't happen fast enough for us, of course. But, you know, it was a disappointment in Florida to see that, you know, we call it a defeat. That 57-58% is a defeat. And you know, these political freaks that get elected to office, they're getting elected with 50+1 vote. But yet we have to, you know, get 60% of the vote in Florida to pass something.
Yeah, we live in the world of the filibuster. It's amazing.
So
it's amazing.
It's quite a movement. So I'm proud to be a part of it. I'm proud to be able to, in my own way, to educate people and to stand up. I mean, we're at Morehouse College on the 20th of this month.
Right. I saw
speaking
that. Yeah.
To students. We're at we've been at University of Georgia. Over 150 students showed up for our forum there. We've been to the North Georgia College. We've been to Kiwanis clubs. We've been to the Rotary clubs. So people, you know, these what I thought would be tough audiences, after the fact, they come up and shake my hand and say, James, thank you for standing up. They know it's right, and they, you know, it takes people to stand up. So we encourage your listeners and anyone who cares to be involved to stand up, and we want everyone to know that there are people out here that can speak for you, but we need your support. We need financial support. We need moral support. And we need you writing letters, placing phone calls, going to your local meetings, talk about the issue, put it in their face, make them address the issue, and I think we'll start changing the laws.
You know, I tell you, that's great words, James. And, you know, I got to tell you, I have been working around this for a long time as well, and one of the things I noticed and one of the things I advocate for, and you may as well, I don't know, but you can tell me, is the hemp side of this discussion. I've always found it interesting how you have marijuana as a Schedule I drug, and of course it's a female plant. And then you have hemp, who is lumped in there together. And some of the stuff that the DEA has even written about this is saying, well, we can't tell the difference, you know, and all these other things. But when you talk about the economic impact of allowing hemp in our society, it seems to me that it is a two-pronged problem as to why they haven't allowed this to go through. We have the recreational and the medicinal side of the plant. We know all about that. We talk all about that. Then we have the industrial side of the argument, and that's being held up by the plastic organizations, by the oil organizations. So it's almost like there's so many different kinds of attacks against this, and I am encouraged, like you are as well. And the hemp industry is being pushed just as hard as the recreational and the medicinal marijuana side of it. And prohibition is absurd anyway. But even putting that aside, and even putting aside recreational use, if you even just look at it from the medicinal side and the industrial side, the fact that we are not allowed to have marijuana in our lives for those two reasons alone is ludicrous. Congress is absurd to keep doing what they're doing. And tell me, how do you see these arguments playing out with the Georgia politicians? Because I know you lobby, as you said. So how do you see it playing out just here in Georgia, for example?
Well, we've talked with Commissioner Black, Agriculture Commissioner. He knows what hemp is. He knows what we can do with it. Sharon Raybert with Normal. We walked into his office, and on the way out, a farmer was walking in, and I struck up a conversation with him, and he said, you know, I've been studying the hemp issue for 2 years. He wants to grow it. So, you know, fortunately, the federal government has, under the latest farm bill, has allowed the states, if they enact state legislation, they can at least begin experimental crops. Kentucky,
right.
Colorado, several other states
right.
have already harvested this year. So we want
right.
Georgia to create a hemp law. We want to start, whether it's 1 acre or 1,000 acres, we've got to begin somewhere. And, you know, will they do it? We need the farmers. We need the farmers to stand up. They have the best interest here and have credibility to stand up and say, you know, we want to grow this crop. You know, we're paying farmers sometimes not to grow crops.
Right,
so,
the subsidy program has been going on for many years.
They want to grow crops. They want to put the seed
yeah.
in the ground. They want to watch it grow, and they want to harvest it and get paid for their labor. And I think hemp could literally be a $1 billion crop in the state of Georgia.
Sure, and then, of course, it also opens the door for the medicinal recreational side. It just seems to me that there's the roadblocks that are up there, the hemp side of it needs to be talked about, too, because we know that we know how corporations are in this country. We know how big money operates in this country. That this is common knowledge now, and we know. I mean, the hemp history, as far as being taken out of our society, DuPont was directly involved in that. Hemp, as you mentioned, the re-legalization of marijuana. It's also the re-legalization of hemp. This is not something that's new. neither one of them that wasn't allowed in the past. And that is a very good way to approach it. I applaud you for that. And hemp, of course, is the big thing. I've been talking about that aspect just as much as the other in regards to how the big corporations do not want it. Hemp really puts a big bite against plastics, a big bite against paper. You know, it also does huge things for the industry that doesn't need insecticides or anything like that. There's a lot that goes on there. And Georgia, being the agricultural wonderland that it is, or should be most of the time, that's a great way to do it, no question about it. And hopefully we can see that happen pretty soon, I hope, that's for sure. I don't know what to think about our wonderful Georgia government, but, you know, that's another subject that's entirely.
Look, the point is, if citizens, as activists, as lobbyists, as citizens, if we don't stand up and let our elected officials know we want these changes, they will say, well, no one, you know, 2 years ago they were saying, well, no one ever contacted me about this issue. Now we've got activists all over the state. They're emailing, phone calling, going to the Capitol. It's become an issue. We're in their face. And so they're having to deal with us. So, you know, we have 30,000 marijuana arrests in the state of Georgia. Okay,
yeah,
30,000. Yet they can't find funds to go after the violent criminals and solve the violent crimes that surround us, but yet they find money to go after 30,000 marijuana offenders. So, you know, many of these are post-traumatic stress. Many of these are people who are self-medicating. They have no choice. They're not, you know, instead of suffering, instead of being under the influence of the pharmaceutical drugs, they choose to go their own route. And what we're hearing through these medical testimonies is, yes, these children have epilepsy, and they have other people have other medical conditions, but the real complaint is the pharmaceutical drugs that the doctors are prescribing them. They're making zombies out of their children. They're really not helping the disease they have, and they're desperate, and they're just absolutely desperate, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get relief for their child and to have a better quality of life. And many are finding out that cannabis is the way to go. You know, we got lawmakers that talk about the Colorado model and how successful that is, but yet they won't entertain the idea of having that in Georgia. So they can't have it both ways.
What do you think about what the federal government, well, I know what you think about it, but I imagine you heard that about what the federal government's doing from the IRS standpoint and the way that they're raiding the Colorado dispensaries as far as taxes are concerned. Have you seen that?
You know, I've seen some. I've seen the headlines. You know, it's like any business. You know, they set up a guideline. The feds have basically said, as long as you follow these eight or so guidelines, the states will be allowed to do what they want. And like any business, whether it's alcohol sales, tobacco sales, or hamburger sales, when people violate the state and federal laws and tax laws, they go after them. So I don't know. You know, I don't know.
No, that's not legality. That's not what I mean. What they have now done is apparently they've been talking about it lately. They've been reporting about it lately. Is the IRS The United States Supreme Court said that the IRS can collect taxes from an illegal business. And they consider, because the federal law dictates what they consider legal or illegal, they consider all the medical marijuana dispensaries and and in Colorado and Washington, the recreational marijuana dispensaries as illegal businesses. So they are allowed to collect taxes, but no one is allowed to benefit if they were a regular business from the tax code in the ways that they normally would. And they are putting dispensaries out of business that way. So, again, we have this federal problem that's interfering with something. So while the states are enacting these laws, because, of course, you have to file taxes as a business, et cetera, this is how they're hurting them again. So we already know about how they raided the dispensaries in California, which was the biggest place they did it. But this is another aspect of what they're doing that has to be dealt with. And how to approach Congress, and as you mentioned earlier, how to approach Congress and get any kind of sense out of them to change this, regardless of which of the duopoly happens to be there, at, you know, because we're going to have them for a while, apparently, whichever one. We got to get them to change that in order to let the businesses thrive. Because if you and I opened up a dispensary here in Georgia, if they passed the law, that's what we would have to deal with, apparently. I wanted to get your take on something like that, because I think I'm telling you something new.
Well, yeah, well, I understand your point. And you know, look, with anything new, this is a new industry for a lot of – it's a new industry that goes against federal law, and the federal government has set up these guidelines, but these issues will be worked out in court. Unfortunately, businesses will have to take their issues to court, and, you know, there is equal protection issues. There's all
yes.
kind of issues that I'm sure they're going to be considering. That is, if you know, they want to collect their taxes, but yet they don't have – the benefit that other businesses have, is that not an equal protection issue? And,
oh, totally.
And so these,
oh, absolutely.
These businesses will have to fight this out. They'll have to have court rulings. The federal government still, while they're reluctantly giving in to some of this, they still want to put pressure on some of these companies. You know, at one point there was an issue with financing and banks doing business, and I think they've
right. yes,
loosened some of those laws now where people are able to
yeah.
get loans. So
right.
things are changing. It takes time, and it's going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly. You know, people are going to be hurt in the process.
Well, I mean, those are great words, James, and staying positive and giving the positive message is so very important for activism. You're definitely an inspiration in that regard as well. I appreciate that because, as you know, as we all see as citizen activists, we have to deal with disappointment more than we deal with success, unfortunately. But when you know the goal is honorable.
I look at issues like civil rights, the civil rights movement, and you know, the issues with gender and women's rights and things, issues like that. You know, those issues have been fought out in court, and the courts have been forced to rule on them. So, you know, I mean, if we don't have some optimism here, then why, you know, should we be hiding under the rock and just hiding from everything and ignoring it? I say no, that, you know, there is hope here. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't be, I hate to use the word wasting my time doing what I'm doing if I didn't feel like there was some hope that these laws will change, and that, you know, I get emails and phone calls every day. In fact, I got a phone call from Dr. Uma, and it's people that call me, people who email me with their stories, and they want to share their personal stories with me and ask, how can I help? How can I be involved? So how can I not be encouraged by people standing up? And you know, I don't know where it's going to lead to. I do know that we have the activists in Georgia have had an impact and on policy here, and we're changing minds. I mean, when you get both Democrat and Republican legislators calling you, asking, first of all, thanking you, and then asking, how can we help you out? That's very encouraging. 20 years ago,
yes.
It was not that way. It was the war on drugs. 85% of Americans were willing to give up their constitutional rights to fight a war on drugs. Now we're
right.
finding 50, 60, 80% of the people supporting reform in this country. So, sure, things have changed.
Well, we certainly saw on the last Tuesday, we have three more jurists, well, more than three, but as far as the larger ones, we have Alaska now, Oregon, and Washington, D.C., joining the legalization or decriminalization crowd, which was wonderful to see. You know, the election was interesting in that way. And, of course, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to cover this subject, because they're, like you talk about, that is fantastic progress. I also noticed the law that they changed in California that is going to allow a number of nonviolent offenders to be released, which is the other aspect of this issue that's so important, the war on drugs. Like you mentioned, people going, all 30,000 arrests, all of this stuff that's being done to put people with marijuana in jail, essentially supporting the cartels in a way, and the war on drugs. And we do have some progress in that regard as well. It already has been suggested that Colorado needs to do that. Washington needs to do that, whether or not they will. Like you say, everything's a process. But certainly a lot to be thankful for on this subject from the elections last Tuesday. What do you feel about that?
Oh, well, certainly. It's certainly encouraging. You know, it's, like I said, it's going to happen slow, one city, one jurisdiction at a time. And, I mean, to think that Washington, it's legal in Washington, D.C.,
yes.
Or hopefully Congress won't block it, but that's an incredible thought. I mean, think about what's happened in just the past couple of years around this country, and everyone, you know, people tell me, James, Georgia's going to be the last state. Well, you know, that's even encouraging to me. We know that eventually,
sure,
49 other states are going to legalize, and hopefully the other 49 states are going to help us here. If not, you know, it's certainly going to change. You know, 20 years ago, we were saying, oh, another 5 years, another 10 years, and here it is 20 or 25 years later. And, you know, I've had some great activist friends, Gatewood Galbraith in Kentucky and Jack Herer, and these people who are icons of the movement, who are
sure,
no longer with us. They never got to see the success and what they did in their lives. And I don't know if I'll ever get to see it here in Georgia. You know, 55 years old, how long does it take? I don't know. I'm in for life, you know. I'm into this
right,
movement for life, and hopefully when I get too old and too tired, maybe these young people that are at these colleges, hopefully we're planting the seeds there, and they're going to stand up, and we're going to keep pushing. So, you know, Georgia is, you know, we think, well, Georgia's going to be tough, but look at Colorado. I mean, look at California. You would think that would have been one of the first states to have.
Would have been easy. Exactly. You're absolutely right about that. It was kind of amazing that it didn't pass in a way. Absolutely. I think that the fact that Colorado and Washington and Oregon beat California was, but then again, you know, it's like you say, it's hard to call, and it's a work in progress and continues to be. And you don't have to. You're only halfway there, James. Don't worry about that. You'll plant plenty of seeds. You know. I'm 52. We're halfway there, buddy. We're gonna keep pushing. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. I think we might have Dr. Umar back. They dropped off the line, but let me see if there are you guys there, Sharon, Dr. Umar.
Dr. Emma, we lost you, and I couldn't get her back. I'm driving up Georgia 400, so I'm here. I was just wanting to listen to what y'all were talking about.
Fantastic.
The doctor
for those who did not listen the last time I had Sharon on. This is Sharon Revert from the. You're the director. Is that the right title for you? The president of Peachtree Moment?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh, executive director, yes, sir.
The boss.
She's
right?
Mama Marijuana.
Mama Marijuana.
James, how are you, dear?
I'm great. Sharon, how are you?
I'm enjoying listening to y'all's conversation.
Well, we missed you. I was wondering where you were at tonight, so I'd like to hear about normal. I'd like to hear about,
what's going on.
Normal's
absolutely
been around forever. I learned about normal many, many years ago, and I've, and that organization has been around. Hopefully it's going to be here for a while. So
yes,
I appreciate Sharon and her involvement in keeping it going.
Yeah, and we appreciate you starting it so many years ago and continuing the fight with Georgia here now. So we're glad to be in that partnership with you, and it's great working with all the activists in Georgia, and we've got a big coalition being brewing, and I'm glad to be a part of the show for a moment tonight. Thanks for having me.
Certainly, Sharon. Your work is fantastic. I'm reminded of how we wound up founding each other months ago when I was looking for the chapter of Normal in Georgia, and I was like, why can't I get a return phone call? And I was calling the wrong number for the longest time, and then when I found you, I'm like, oh my God, you guys are all over the place. Doing great work. And I'm like, I must have been looking at the wall. you know, it's like when we connected, it was like the you know, the stuff was falling out of the sky. I'm like, this is what I'm talking about. I said, you know, I just couldn't find you. It was amazing. You think I would know how to use them?
That's all right. Hopefully we've got that remedied. And if anybody needs to find us now, I'm hoping that our web presence is a little better and you can find us.
It was great. It's great. And I remember the numbers that I was calling, and they were just, I don't remember exactly how I got them, but I just didn't call the third one on the list. I called the first two. And I had to. I just didn't go to the third one because I thought it was like out of the area or something. But
you kept calling Narcotics Anonymous.
I know it was a normal number, or at least allegedly was. But the person who was on the other end never called me back. I kept leaving messages, and it was very, you know, and I had looked it up, and I had these three normal numbers, and supposedly the two I was calling was in the area, you know, in our area. When meanwhile it's Sharon that dominates, and rightfully so, and with all the work, you're all over the place. I'm trying to go to your events. I'm like, can you guys do something like local? You're in Valdosta, you're in Savannah, you're all over. It's fantastic. You're everywhere. You guys are everywhere. It's tireless work, wonderful work. You guys went out when the police did the militarized police in Habersham County. That was a wonderful response that was done by a lot of people. And of course, you guys talked about that and stayed on top of that. All of the educational stuff that you do and all the chapters that you have, and you stay right on top. And it's obvious that there's a lot of people involved, and you're keeping people interested, and it's fantastic. I love it. And I want to make sure the Coffee Party audience and all the audience out there, the Liberty audience, everybody, knows about you guys here and nationally as well. As you know, I work with a number of the other organizations in the other states, and you guys work as hard as anybody, and it's great to see. That's for sure, I got to tell you.
Well, we appreciate that. Yeah, we're growing all over the state, and if any of your listeners are interested in opening up a chapter, we'll be glad to help them out. We're working real close with Georgia Care, and we appreciate all the work they do. James is invaluable. He's a great face for this movement. He knows how to talk the political garb, and we love working with him. And we appreciate
fantastic. You
as well, Bobby, and all that you're doing for the Liberty Movement. There's Liberty in my coffee tonight as well.
That's fantastic. I appreciate that. So tell me, what's next on the Peachtree Normal agenda? I know you have stuff coming up soon. Tell our audience about it.
We do. We're gonna. We'll have some representatives, of course, tomorrow in Augusta for the Medical Marijuana Committee hearing. Dr. Uma was supposed to be speaking, but her invitation was rescinded, and hopefully she will be speaking to the full legislature sometime in January or February. And then our next event, we're going to be holding, you know, we have things all over the state, but we're opening up our Savannah chapter, I believe it's next week. And then our next thing in Atlanta is our Hempy Holiday Party. And that will be held at Manuel Tavern. I'd like to invite everybody to come out and meet us. We're going to have some musical entertainment, some food to munch on and celebrate our successes for the year and just kind of network and talk to people and get more people on board for next year and our big push in 2015. And we're also collecting presents and other things for the Ronald McDonald House. And that's going to be held the first Tuesday of December at Manuel's Tavern from 7 to 11. And if anybody would be interested in coming out in that. And then we're working on other things. We're talking to lobbying firms. We're building coalitions with other groups. And, you know, there's just a lot going on.
You know, the one thing that sticks out with the both of you is you are, it's not just in the area of marijuana, but it is important in our society. We know how crazy our society is from the standpoint of our government is so corrupt, et cetera. And what do you say to an activist on regardless of the issue, what do you say to an activist to keep going? Because you guys are model activists. There's no question about it. So, Sharon, what do you say to someone who either is in it and getting down or in it and doing something new? What advice would you give? What would be one of the things that you would say for sure?
Well, I would say we were never promised a rose garden. There's some thorns along the path, but when you know you're doing the right thing, it'll be okay. You can always lean on other people in your movement and in other movements to help guide you. And when you need a break, take a step back. Somebody will step up and help until you get back. Don't burn out, in other words, because we need each and every one of you. Just stay motivated, encourage each other, make friends, and keep in touch like James and I do. Because when I get down, I call him, and he pumps me up, and vice versa, I hope. So, just like James said, it's a slow process. Someone from Normal, in fact, she's Sabrina Fendrick with Normal. She's 28-year-old, told me something that I will never, that I will never forget. She said, "Sharon, this is a marathon, not a sprint."
Yeah.
And I always keep that close to my heart when I get frustrated. I remember that, there's people that have been working on this issue and the other issues, gay marriage and everything else for, decades. And it takes a long time, but what's worth having is worth working for.
Fantastic. And you, James, what would be the one thing that you would say to someone the same thing?
We deal with serious issues, but it's okay to have fun. It's okay to be an activist, have fun, enjoy educating people, enjoying standing up in front of people and saying things that other people wish they could say. There's something kind of liberating about that and be able to talk about an issue that's been taboo for so long. So I enjoy that, just being having fun doing it. There is, like I said, something to be said for speaking up on an issue that, relatively few people will really stand up. I mean, the risk of arrest, the risk of the decades of the propaganda, people are afraid. People are scared. And I feel like when people like Sharon and I and others stand up, that it gives people courage. And so, they're not alone, And I know that we speak for a lot of people out there that, that have the 9-to-5 jobs who, who enjoy their liberty and their private lives, and they don't want to go out and necessarily be a spokesperson. But again, don't wait until the handcuffs go on you to be an activist. Okay, that's what's happening. It's really frustrating sometimes when we get phone calls from people saying, "Oh, I just got arrested. Can you help me?" Well, get before the handcuffs go on, get involved and try to change these things so it doesn't happen to you. It's too late. Once you're arrested, once the handcuffs go on, it's a little too late to be involved. But, sometimes that's what it takes, a little shock of reality, because most people, don't think about the ramifications of breaking the law. And, we as free people, we believe that we can live our lives that we see fit, and sometimes people do engage in civil disobedience. Somebody's smoking the tons of marijuana that's being grown in this country. And, we can walk in the grocery store and see them every day. Unfortunately, they may not be the activists. But, we got friends out there paying hundreds of dollars for a bag of weed, but they won't give our organizations $10 to help the cause. So I kind of look at it from that perspective that, you can't sit on the sidelines. Find your place in the movement. and be active. Do something. If it's nothing more than sending an email or sending $5 to an organization you trust and support. So that's what I encourage.
Fantastic, fantastic. I totally agree with both sentiments. There's no doubt about it. The activist world is a tough one, as we know, but it really isn't. You've got to do something. I mean, I look at it in the sense of, number one, as I'm a parent, I don't have a choice to sit by and watch all of this go on, all the wrong go on that we have, and not do something, and not join something, not get the word out, not donate, not do a radio, whatever it is. I completely agree. Our society is not allowing us to sit on the sidelines, and this particular issue, the marijuana issue, the hemp issue, has been going on for so long. You know, I remember I'm 52, as I mentioned, and you know, High Times magazine has been dealing with this issue since it became a magazine. And, you know, I remember reading it at least as 10 years old, 11 years old. I'm sure I saw it that far back. And it was always there. The issue was always there. Regardless of the other aspects of it, there was always stuff about normal. There was always stuff about legalization to read if you took the time to do it. You know, and whether it was young or old, and this has been an important issue for a long time, and I appreciate you guys coming on and talking to me about it giving us a little bit of a ray of sunshine out there on how well the issue is doing, and that there are good people with a lot of energy doing the fight. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your talk and your program, And we enjoy spreading the word.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. And you know, you're welcome. And you know, I'm going to see you around. one thing about me doing this show is that I get to see you guys around, which is fun. We get to do stuff. We get to stand up and cause trouble and talk to politicians together and separately in the same area. It's kind of fun. We could actually. They're going to hate us.
Well, we have to get together and pass the coffee cup around. So,
oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. I mean, it's very important that you know the coffee party is the reason I joined coffee party some years ago was because of the discourse that was going on and all the disinformation. And the platform of the coffee party is a coalition platform, transpartisan, fact-based civil discourse, which we needed it. This is a 2010, and that was one of the things we needed a lot of, just to so people can hear the message of whatever the particular subject was, because there was so much, you know. And I'm, as we all know, our mainstream media is pathetic, and just kind of feeds into the animal all the time. So, the one thing that has happened that is wonderful with the coffee party is a lot of people have gotten involved, and we have 500,000 people on our Facebook page. So we do get the word out and get the message out there, and we have an extensive reach. So everybody's going to know about you guys and about this show, and then we archive it, and hopefully people will listen to it and get the message about this issue that we're talking about tonight, and about helping our veterans with PTSD, and knowing about Normal's work and Georgia Care's work and Dr. Umar's work, which is what it's all about. So I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Well, we appreciate you having us, and wow, that's a huge following. Yeah, like Dr. Umar always says, reach one, teach 10. If we reach all those people and they teach 10, we'll have a movement that won't be able to be stopped. So we appreciate all the work you do, Bobby, and I'm going to get off here and go get busy on some other work.
Fantastic. You have a very good evening, and keep drinking that coffee, as we say in the coffee party, as Janine Loud says, coffee party on.
And, yeah, I love that coffee.
Yep, we'll have to sit down and pass the coffee cup around real soon.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks. Good night,
Sounds
Dave.
Great.
Good night,
good
Bobby.
Night. Good night.
Good night. Well, once again, thank you to James Bell and Sharon Revert and Dr. Uma Dhanavalan joining me on I Take Liberty With My Coffee, Bobby Rodrigo. I'm going to take care of some business, let you guys know a little bit more about Coffee Party Radio, of course. We have other shows that are broadcast during the week. Of course, we have the fantastic Janine Loudon and Debbie Lynn Molyneux. And Thursday afternoon at 12 Pacific time, 3 Eastern time, Lunch with Loudon, Coffee Party Radio show that's been going on for quite some time. Fantastic host, fantastic subject matter, fantastic guests. Always involved, always trying to make our society better. And Saturday, of course, the level stays the same with Politics Done Right with your host, Egberto Willis. Egberto works tirelessly as an activist and writes for the Daily Kos, writes for the Huffington Post, has a blog on Coffee Party on our Coffee Party main page, does Coffee Party Radio, does Move to Amend Radio, is involved, is on the board of Move to Amend, also does a show on terrestrial radio in Houston on Monday evenings that you can call in and listen to and call in and participate and listen to on the computer. But the point is, and he's constantly involved in letting our society know what's going on out there, pulling the covers off of things. And that's Saturday at 1 Eastern time, Politics Done Right. All of the work that's done on the Coffee Party. Of course, we are a transpartisan and we organization. We like civil discourse. We like facts. That's what we want to promote. That's what we want to talk about. We want people to talk to us, with us, to each other about the things that are important in our society that need to be changed, fixed, stay the same, whatever it might be. And we work with a number of organizations. I mentioned a few of them already. Move to Amend. There's one of them, of course. People Against the NDAA, which I'm the national event coordinator for. For example, I also am a member of the Solution Institute's team, solutioninstitute.org. Also, OperationEducate.me. Operation Educate is another organization that I've gotten involved with to help spread the message of fixing our society, getting corruption out of Washington and everywhere else. I'm not a fan of corruption at any government level. I personally advocate, I want to see us follow our Constitution. We just kind of just threw it to the wind. I believe that if we follow the Constitution closer and properly in Washington and elsewhere, a lot of the ills in our society will be solved or will be closer to being solved. We have too much arbitrary and capricious behavior going on in Washington from the White House and the executive and the agencies and certainly in Congress. I do find it amazing. Congress can have a 9% approval rating, 11% approval rating, whatever it is, and 94% of them get reelected. Which means that the game is rigged for me. If you're going to be that dissatisfied, then why are they still in office? Regardless of the reason, the voters didn't come out because of apathy. The message wasn't right by one party or the other. I don't think the party should be in control. I don't know. I was talking about this earlier to another activist friend of mine, Dan Aronson, and I was mentioning one of the things I talk about all the time is that our tax dollars pay for the primaries of the Republican and the Democrat Party. And what I believe most of America doesn't realize or remember or think about is that the Republican and the Democratic Party are private corporations. Private. They are not public entities. They are not something that works for us. And they have made the game so they can take our tax dollars and use them for our primaries. That's a big deal. And this has been going on forever. And then they have rigged the game in the form of ballot access. Independents and other parties other than Republicans and the Democrats cannot run on the ballots the same way that Democrats and Republicans are. They have created rules that are not constitutional as far as coming from the Constitution. and they've created rules that say, you, in order for you to run on the ballot against me, you're going to have to do this or that. Usually involves petitioning, getting a certain number of signatures. Here in Georgia, for example, we just had an election for governor. Horrible candidates in my regard. But as far as there was a third party candidate, Libertarian candidate, Andrew Hunt. Now, your vote is your vote. It always should be considered that way. You should vote on principle, not party, I believe. I advocate that strongly. We must vote on principle and not party. We have to look at the individuals. I would prefer that no party party affiliation was listed on the ballots at all, and only the names would be there. I think that we would work harder to find out more about these people. Why I bring up the gubernatorial election is one of the issues that we were faced with in Georgia, if we wanted to see ballot access just for the Libertarian Party, because each party has to do this, other than the Democrats and Republicans, the Libertarian Party would have to receive 20% of the vote. In order to have ballot access for the next election cycle statewide for all offices where they wouldn't have to do petitioning. Now think about that. So regardless of what the percentage is, the Democrats and Republicans here in the state are saying, you can't run on the ballot unless you have X amount of votes, otherwise you're going to have to go back and petition for any office that you can think of in this state. For me, that's absurd. Ballot access has nothing to do with voter suppression. It's just another aspect of rigging the game. It has nothing to do with partisan politics. They're both doing it. The Republicans and Democrats both are doing it. If you look around the country, you will see stories, Illinois, Ohio, New Jersey, Georgia. Illinois and New Jersey are particularly interesting right now because there are court battles going on against both parties from other parties. There's five parties involved in Illinois in court actions and disputes. In New Jersey, a federal judge actually said only Democrats and Republicans are allowed to be in the game and are telling the voters that. And again, where is that coming from? Where are these rules coming from? They're not coming from the Constitution. There's no way, shape, or form that they're in there. It doesn't have a loophole in it. It doesn't have an avenue in it. These people are making it up as they go along. Conservative, liberal is not in the Constitution. Conservative and liberal are political positions. They're not constitutional. They have nothing to do with it. You can argue that, well, being conservative is closer. You can argue that being liberal is closer. It's irrelevant to the actual document. You can complain that the document was created by 55 white guys who were elitist landowners. I don't care about that. I care about what it says and how it's applied. I ask you directly, do you want your protections or not? Do you want to be safe from unreasonable searches and seizures, or do you want anybody to walk into your house or go through your life and do whatever they feel like because they feel like it, because they don't need probable cause, because that's the kind of laws that they have written? Do you want to be able to say what you want, where you want, how you want, because you know you can? Or do you want them to be able to write laws that give you free speech zones and tell you you can only do it if you stand here? Or if you want to be arrested or maced or anything, if you are doing peaceful assembly, like has happened a lot in the last 4 or 5 years, Occupy Movement, Ferguson are just perfect examples of that. Do you want to be arrested and put in a jail somewhere and not be given bail, not be given access to an attorney, not be given access to the court system at all, not be given access to a judge at all? Is that what you want? Because there is a law that exists that says that very thing, and it is unconstitutional. Is that how you want this country to be? If that's how you want it to be, then change the Constitution and throw it away. If that's not how you want your life to be, then stand up and make these politicians accountable for their unconstitutional behavior. Make them follow it, and then talk about what is best for this country from that point. But they're all over the place. There's been articles recently about net neutrality. It's a lot more complicated of an issue than what it appears. The president coming in and saying that they need to make it a public utility, okay? Not saying I agree or disagree, but it's not that simple if he's going to do that, Kenny, first of all. And if he can, what are the rules? And if he can't, why are they being able to monopolize it, which is something else that pretty much was taken care of at the beginning of the 20th century? And yet here we are dealing with the same issue again. Why are gerrymandering procedures being allowed in this country by the Democrats and Republicans? And yes, for you liberals that are part of the Coffee Party, there's so many of you, yes, Democrats gerrymander just like the Republicans do. Yes, they do. Check Hawaii, for example. Check New York, for example. If you look at the election results, if you just sit there and take some time, pick a state, any state, and just browse through the congressional elections, particularly, because there's so many of them, and then the state ones, and look and see how many of these elections went unopposed. The reason that that's happening is because of gerrymandering. It's not happening because of anything else. They've locked themselves in. I thought it was interesting a couple of years ago when the good congressman from Florida, and I say good congressman only because I like to say that and wish it, but the good congressman, Grayson, who was okay to a degree, was talking on television. He was actually on Bill Maher, and he was talking about the work week of a person in Congress. Now, we all know they only work about 100 days a year. That's also ridiculous considering the problems we have in this country and the stuff that we need to be, that needs to be done, and the complicated laws we have to deal with, the policy and procedures, 100 days, especially with the salary system. But he said when they work, when they're actually working during these 100 days, they work 60-hour work weeks, 50, 60. I mean, I work 60-hour work week. But 50, 60-hour work weeks. But what he said that was so interesting, I thought, and illuminating, is he said that half of their time, at least 20 to 30 hours, 20 hours for sure, of every work week when they're in Washington is dedicated to fundraising. And my jaw hit the ground, not because I thought it was new news, but because a congressman was standing on national television and saying it out loud. And, you know, there's stories. If you go to Congress or if you talk to people in Congress, they'll tell you that there's, for example, in the House, the GOP has a wall of shame. And they have listed on the wall of shame how much people are raising in the party, how much money they're raising. And of course, if they're not doing very well, thus the wall of shame. Now think about that. Instead of working for you, all they're doing is fundraising. That's what they're doing. That's what you elected them to do, and this is what they are doing. Is that why you elected them, to fundraise for any amount of time? Now we're talking about the entire time that they are in office, 20 hours a week when they are working, which is only 100 days a year, roughly. If you look at the amount of time that they worked last year, I believe it was the least in a very long time that it happened. The other thing I want to touch on briefly is the results of the election, as far as the Republicans taking, I think they took 7 seats, in the Senate, I want to say, whatever the number is, and they gained some more seats in the House. Every single time in our country's history, with the exception of once, when there has been a 6th year in a presidency, whenever that was, of course, it was a 6th year in Bush's, for example, and a 6th year in Clinton, and a 6th year in Reagan's, There was a 6-year Nixon, though Gerald Ford was in office at the time, but it was still the same presidency. There was a 6-year in Eisenhower, and you just go back from there. Every single time during the 6-year of the presidency, like clockwork, they lost seats in the chambers of Congress to the opposite party. Of course, in my view, it shouldn't be only two parties. It shouldn't actually be any parties. We should all be independent, but just staying within history. So, you know, and of course we did elect some very dubious characters. Yeah, I was very unhappy to see Senator Udall lose, mainly because when I look at people in Congress who are behaving constitutionally, Senator Udall is closer to the top of the list than most. And he's not there anymore, for example. So don't panic, everybody. These things happen. Unfortunately, we are stuck in a cycle because we are living in the status quo, and mainstream media knows it. The political parties know it. They have rigged the game. They know the game very well. So in closing, I just want to say, stay to the message, pay attention, hold your elected officials to their promises. If you elected somebody because you wanted them to do something, then you should hold them to it. You need to get away from the party platform and vote principle for parties. I already see some changes in the people that were elected in their rhetoric saying they're not going to do this or they're going to do that, and they're being called out on it, which is good. Our president did that to a very high degree when he was elected in 2008. He promised a number of things, particularly along the constitutional lines, that he did not deliver on, a number of things. So I was very disappointed in seeing that because I was paying attention because I would have voted for him in 2012 if, in fact, he would have kept those particular promises. I didn't vote for him in 2008 because I didn't believe him. I didn't vote for Cain either, of course, for McCain either. But I just want to ask everybody to hold on to your principles and vote principle, and don't vote along the party line, and hold everybody in office accountable, local, federal, whatever, politics or local, pay attention, absolutely. And stay the course, and let's make our society better. Let's fix some of the ills in our society. Again, I want to thank Dr. Umar Dinalabin. I want to thank Sharon Revert. I want to thank James Bell coming on Coffee Party Radio this evening and talking about the PTSD treatments for veterans, as well as what's going on with the marijuana legalization movement and the medicinal marijuana legalization, decriminalization movement, and treatments that are available out there and why it's being done and why it should be done, and also the discussion about hemp being legalized, et cetera. Please join me next week, 8:30. I take liberty with my coffee. I appreciate you joining me tonight. Everybody have a fantastic week. And make sure, and if you haven't familiarized yourself again with the Constitution, please do. Remember, we the people. It's not we the corporations. It's not we the elected officials. It's not we the government. It's we the people. Everybody have a good night, and I will see you next week.